Brass Dex, good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Hi, morning.
I pray you well in all your ways and the people of Barbados.
Thank you, sir.
I agree with the last caller because I've had a similar situation with a family member. She's now passed, but at least we know that someone else has seen it and opened it up. I'm still reeling from the statement the brother made about you looking into his house and knowing a woman doing to him. I think that was funny. However, my question is about farming, and it is going out to the ministry to find out what the Ministry of Agriculture is doing about people who have ideas, and not only ideas, but they have business plans and business agreements in their hands, but they are waiting lands. And one of the other issues that we're having is water, and then we're having issues where there's a high number of sickness and diseases coming from the pesticides and herbicides that are being put into the land. Barbados don't have the land that can carry so much pesticides and herbicides. But there's a way around that as well. I don't know why certain projects are being held up. I have a project that has been in there. You mentioned the Bible earlier, so let's look at Joseph and see that his project worked for all of Egypt. And it also fed the people around, but it also meant that there was a model to go from in order to make things happen in times like these. In times like these, Egypt had a famine. We are in a famine, whether it be financial, whether it be COVID, whatever you want to call it. But there are plans sitting down on tables that needs to be looked at in order to generate the facilities needed that can even help government. Because if we can reduce the amount of sicknesses going into the hospitals from the pesticides and herbicides and from the GMO foods that is now seeping into our communities at high levels, then you can ease a situation. The population situation will turn over. I mean, we count, what, 60, 70 people a day that is being buried. So you have to repopulate, but you also have to feed your people something that is healthy. Like for you, for instance, there is a healthy way of doing it. So your farming has to play a part. Your food and your water has to play a serious part of what is happening within your community or within your nation, for that matter. So I would like to know what they're doing, if they're on slow pace, checking to see what is going to work, or if they're holding back on some things because people don't have the funds and the money to put into it, like those that would come in from outside and buy the property and then put the property back into same style of farming or whatever it is, or just cut it up for housing. My God, we have enough housing around. There are big houses in Barbados that have one or two people living in them. You know, we have to start teaching the people how to come back and do family ideas. But there's a lot of barren land, and there's a lot of land with bush.
Sir, and I made the comment in a previous program that I think it was the then chief town planner who said there was enough land in Barbados, not agricultural land, available for housing, so there was no need to cut up agricultural lands further. I've heard government plans for putting arable lands back into agriculture. They talked about several of the plantations that were owned previously by Clico being put back into productive use. There has been talk by the Minister of Agriculture when he was on the program. I was producing that day, so it was certainly a couple of days ago, that there will be ongoing work on trying to produce the best food we can, a food security plan, because should there be shutting down of our ports and other countries not being able to export, you got wildfires in the U.S. and you got land burning up and smoke and various other things affecting some of the places where we import produce from, and that we'll be looking at a food security plan that allows us to start growing some of the crops we could grow. So perhaps the best thing to do is to light the fire under them, figuratively, of course. Remind them of your plans, make further applications. The cost, however, of putting non-arable lands back into agriculture will take some doing. I noticed, in addition, the Chone speech mentioned growing hedgerow and couscous grass, and that too was a part of it. So the plans are there. Now, how long they take to implement and how serious they're treated, so that depends on the people making the application pursuing it. Because the same way the hoteliers and the other business people, if you look at the newspaper today, the former head of the Chamber of Commerce said Christmas is going to make or break them. I read the comment by the JADA head saying that, you know, they have to redraw plans because of COVID. So they will be pressing ahead with their investments, with their ways to make money. And those persons in the agricultural sector need to do the same thing. You go to government and you say, look, according to the throne speech delivered by Her Excellency the Governor General, we are going to have some $1.4 billion in infrastructure hotels, 4,500 construction workers who have to be fed, 3,275 jobs in the hotel sector, training to be done for these people, and therefore they will need to be fed. And therefore we will need to have tomatoes for the men, because the, you know, the part in the tomatoes are good for males. And we need, but you, I know you love, we need to have grass, and I don't mean the smoking kind, I mean, you know, the good grasses that John eats because he's a vegan. And we need to do that, sir. I'm pushing. Well, I don't like chicken, so I can talk about the chicken. But the pork, I would eat the pork. I should not, but I would have a piece once in a while. But yeah, but no, that we need to have fish, vegetables, we need to have a balanced diet, we need to feed the construction workers, or else they can fall down on the job. And the hotel ain't gonna get constructed properly. And the guests coming here will want to drink some golden apple juice and you know, and eat some Bajan food. So we need to grow it. Sweet potatoes and yam and dashin and green bananas. And then you need to have real bananas as opposed to bananas in the bottle for the children we plan to have to make up the 8,000. Because I don't see why we should be giving our children bananas in a bottle written Gerber or Gerber, whatever it's called, when they got a banana tree that could go outside in the backyard.
You know that.
Why? Because the baby on the bottle smiling and white? My baby was not white. She was smiling a lot, but she was a very healthy little bouncy child.
All right.
So look, we need to make our people eat what we grow, right? And right. I agree with you. If you have plans and you have the land, keep pushing. We got to do it. We have to do it, sir. We can't afford to lag.
Well, thank you very much, Dennis.
Thank you as well. Thank you. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Dennis.
Hey.
Okay, three things. Quick warning of a question.
Mm-hmm.
I actually sent you the email. You would have responded.
Yeah. Okay.
Because, you know, I don't want the little quiet blackouts on the radio. I don't know why, when they're providing the COVID statistics,
mm-hmm.
they don't ever refer to the total number of imported cases into Barbados.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
Males and females, because I'm looking at it online. They can give you males and females,
mm-hmm.
total check, total mm-hmm. positive, and who's being discharged.
Yeah.
As a Barbadian, since we're not having communal spread, what exactly of that total 900-something that is positive was actually importing?
That's a good question, because I think you will find, if that statistic is given, most of them would be. There was a small percentage from following it from the start of the lockdown to now. I recall there were a couple people, I think there were just two, and I'm using couple in the correct way here, who did not say how they got it when they were trying to do contact tracing. There were two people who did not want to say with whom they had been in contact. I stand to be corrected, there was more than two, but I recall two cases that were highlighted in the press. There were some who, a small number, I don't think more than maybe 8 or 10, perhaps 10, I'm stretching the limit here to 10, who were locals who came into contact with someone from overseas who they had been in contact with. So someone came from overseas, went to their family home, and, you know, that way. But there was not mass community spread. We actually brought it down to zero. And after that, every case has been an imported one, caught at our port of entries.
Right.
So I would hazard a guess that a minuscule percentage of that number was local and not imported, but originally would have come from contact with somebody who came into the island.
Right. Are they providing statistics? Provide all statistics.
All of them. I am in agreement with you on that one. I can't say I disagree. I do.
All right. Now, number two, wastewater, lack of rain in Barbados, and scarcity of water in certain parishes. We know, and every year we're going to go through the same process, there's a dry period. Then there's the rainy season. And whenever there's rainy season, I will probably have an inability to tell at least 97% of water runs into the sea via gullies. Why is it that we cannot build dams and barbies and those areas where we could control the flow of water? We're not building the dams for drinking water. We're building the dams so the water remains longer on the island so it could permeate down into the reservoir area.
Sir, I know Apesill has a dam. I think it was man-made.
Yeah, but all the dams on the island currently are private.
Well, that's the point. That's the point I was getting to, right? That's the point I was getting to.
Because we need it. Let me give you some location. I mentioned this on the radio some years ago. There is Lambert's in St. Peter. There's a gully that runs from Lambert's and it passes through Pie Corner. There are times when there's a bridge there and Pie Corner goes from Pie Corner to Cave Hill. There's a bridge that's at least 30 feet above the road, and there are times when water crosses that bridge, 30 feet up. And if you live in Pie Corner or you live in Cove Bay, you cannot leave until the water subsides. So if you dam that gully, there's no one in that immediate vicinity that you'll be affecting. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
It's down in San Andrew, but the dam. There's a private pond somewhere down there. That area says that is the bottom of a hill, and all water runs downhill. As far as you know, water doesn't run up a hill. You should find somewhere down there to put a dam down there, a natural dam again. That means that in a case like that, you could pipe water from there to whichever connecting link takes it to St. John, who are always crying out for lack of water.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the water that comes down to Spikestone. That comes from up in the ground. All that flooding you see in Spikestone, subject correction, and that water comes down from in their ground, comes down through all the gullies. So why is it we cannot block some of these strategic gullies for dams?
Sir, I suppose the lack of a will to do it, or the belief that Barbados, being a coral country, has a natural provision for water, which means it falls from the sky, it runs off into the aquifers, it permeates the ground, it goes into the foreshore, it could be picked up there by desal plants and used to pump water to the reservoirs through an aging pipe system. And we've been doing it for years, so we can continue to do it that way. I have heard the damming brought forth before. I was told about evaporation, expense, and various other things that I suppose the persons who are experts in the field will think that's sufficient to negate the argument or keep me quiet. But like you, having lived in countries that have large reservoirs, dams, Trinidad and Tobago, where people have drowned in various dams and reservoirs, Grenada, that... from time to time, there are dead animals floating in it, but they got it out and they treated the water and the population have not died or gotten ill as a result. So I suppose they know how to manage it. But I've lived in those two countries. I've also traveled through the Grenadines where people catch their own water and have cisterns and various other things because they don't have coral and they don't have desal plants, although there are some now. So If Barbados is a water scarce country, as it has been declared, if we are aware that we have 1.2 billion worth of hotels to be built and more, if we have a desire to have 80,000 more people to provide us with an income, we have to get them water. They have to drink water. They have to. And therefore, it is essential to life. So therefore, the same way we look at different housing plans to house upper class, middle upper, middle lower, and lower, and we have different types of housing solutions, then let us have different types of water solutions. I can't see why you would not want to do that. I can't. But.
But unless you
so
want
I with you.
You made the status quo.
But why? And that's my question. If the status quo right now is not adequately serving the population you have right now because of a series of things. One, drought. Two, poor pipes. Three, pumps that go down from time to time and so on, and then wastage. If you're not adequately supplying what you have now, you have to do projections. And you have to say, by 2025, we should have water from these sources. By 2030, these additional wells should be brought on. And if we're going to be doing agriculture, we need irrigation for our crops. We need more wells to be dug, whatever. But again, deal with your population so that they understand what you want to do, the timeline you want to do it, and therefore get them involved in helping you. But have multiple sources from which you can draw. Can't be that difficult, sir. Can't be that difficult. That's why we have technocrats. Yep.
Interregional travel. Now, I heard Dr. Gonzalez from St. Vincent Moore talking about the interregional travel. And if you're referring to the regional bubble, you don't need to get that testing before you leave your island, your country. How are we going to leave? LIAT is no longer, I checked the LIAT website this morning. They have no flight schedule. They are under administrative management.
Mm-hmm.
I've looked at four other airlines. But traveling regionally, they don't fly the routes that LIAT flies. So right now, if I need to conduct my business, I need to go to Antigua. I need to fly to Trinidad by one airline to get a connecting flight to Antigua. It will cost me $693.90, whereas LIAT would have cost me $515.
Yeah, sir, that's a good question. That is a very good question. And
originally, how are we going to travel? By ferry? The ferry was 20 years ago, and I still need
to. Because there are people who keep saying that the ferry can take too long. But the truth is that we urgently need to have resolution to interregional travel. It is essential to our commercial life. It's essential to our recreational life. It is essential to our people. And the longer it takes to sort it out, is the more difficult it will be. I saw an interesting comment made about interregional travel that mirrors the conversation we're having about public service vehicles in Barbados. And that is the line that is drawn between what is a service and what is a commercial business. And I think the challenge that we have with our interregional travel is that some people see it as a service, which means provide it at whatever cost, subsidize it and keep the cost down so that our people could travel. And the operators of the airline that see it, or the airlines that see it as a profit-making business, just like our PSVs, and say, raise the fees, give us more money so we could maintain the aircraft, etc., cut down your landing fees. I saw a list compiled by the late Owen Arthur. It fell into my lap by accident or on purpose, outlining the fees paid by regional governments to international airlines to fly into the Caribbean that were not paid to LIAT. And trust me, sir, it is staggering.
I'm aware of the fees. Staggering. It's also not, just look at the landing fees alone.
Correct. Correct.
I've talked about LIAT and interregional travel because I do, let's say, about 90 to 95 of my business in 2019 came from regional work, mm-hmm. traveling outside Barbados to work.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a call. We've had a conversation. Is it you or one of the other moderators? We actually sent in the price, the breakdown of a ticket.
Mm-hmm. I've so seen it too.
Percent. You have to remember, it's 60% of a LIAT ticket is actually taxes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When a flight leaves Canada, USA, England, and they're flying to Barbados, the empty seats are covered by the government. But LIAT has a flight. LIAT has a flight. I think they carry like 60 persons. It could be 58, because they usually keep 2 free for staff traveling. Mm-hmm. Let's say you have a flight.
Emergencies too. I know somebody who worked with Texaco who had a seat booked permanently on LIAT for him, because he had to be in any island at any time on Texaco business. I guess if you put in fuel in the plane, they got a whole seat for you. But yeah, they keep a seat like that.
When LIAT flies 5 times into Barbados, regardless of where it's coming from, that's 300 people that just arrived in Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
And on any given day, more than 5 flights arrive in Barbados.
Yeah.
On any given day.
Yep.
More than 5 flights will arrive in Barbados. Mm-hmm. So we are going to kill ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to kill ourselves for the international carriers, because we want foreign dollars.
We want foreign dollars, correct.
We don't want the EC dollars converse the same thing, because that charges you in US dollars anyhow.
True. So, look, and that's one of the things I don't understand about this. Eh? This fact that you can have an airline, international airline, that says, if you want my business, this is what you have to pay me. And you end up paying for empty seats to say you have airline connection to, I don't know, South America or somewhere in Europe or Uzbekistan or some place like that. And then you get 5 people from there every 2 weeks maybe, but you continue to pay it. And you have a regional airline, but we tinker in with whether it should be in Barbados or whether it should be in Antigua, and it's not going to St. Lucia because you don't have enough St. Lucian pilots. And, you know, the usual little bickering across the back fence that we engage in for reasons that I don't understand, because I'm a vagrant. But, sir, I take your point, and you're not the only person. I know colleague Mr. Wickham. I've seen Bajans in various airports in the Caribbean, in Antigua. I saw a former government minister there, and I know they were not just, you know, sitting down having a good time. They actually were on business. They were there on business or in transit going to somewhere else on business. And they travel up and down the region for commercial purposes. And therefore, this interregional travel has to be fixed. It has to be fixed urgently. And by the way, let me say this. I support ferries. I support ferries. I have used the sea from the time I was 7. It takes time. But if I got to check in 2 hours in advance for airline flight because of COVID and other restrictions, terrorists and what have you, perhaps 2.5 hours, then I have to sit in the airport for 2.5 hours. And it takes how long to fly from here to Miami? Not an hour. Not 15 minutes, not 20 minutes. And then when I get there, it takes another hour or so, depending on the, you know, getting through customs and immigration. So if I could do that because I want to go to Miami on business, I could take a ferry that would get me from here to St. Vincent in 5 hours. Because I know there's some that could do it in less than that.
I'll take 5 hours. Yeah. Show the number. I know it's longer take 5 hours.
I know it longer take 5 hours, sir. I was saying 5 hours to stretch it.
Yeah.
Because I want you to go through the same check-in procedure. It's not going to take 5 hours. So I've sailed between Barbados and St. Vincent using sail alone. I got there in about 10 hours. So a ferry with engines can do it in less than that. You know, but sir, look, it is not impossible. It is that people are afraid of certain things they have not done before. There's this seeing got no back door that we're afraid of. And we're comfortable going in the air, although we don't have wings. So, you know, it's just something like the same issue you raised with the wells and reservoirs that we got to change our thinking on. And we got to do it real fast, because divided, we will fall. Thank you, sir. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Dennis.
Hi, morning.
How are you?
I am all right, and you?
I'm good. I want to put 2 cards on the table. One is education with COVID, and one is this recent discussion about the 80,000 that we
persons
supposedly need.
Required.
Yes. Yes. This is not unique to Barbados. This is a global challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Japan
That's right.
is having it. There are some European countries that
Canada
are
is the one I pick on all the time because their advertisements right. are blatant.
Right.
They actually tell you who they want and why.
Yes, exactly. And so someone this week mentioned about the gay people being part of the problem. And I want to say that that's there, but they want to feel so. That's how they want to feel. But scientific research is showing that it's a global thing. And it is also related to development and education, that the more countries come out of rural farming areas and the population becomes more educated, especially the women, the number of children decrease. And this, the scientists out there are challenging the UN's model because the UN believes that by whatever time that the world population will grow to 15 billion, and the scientists are saying no, it would not exceed 10 billion because of this phenomenon, as well as other factors. Now, how we treat to it, we need to treat to it on multiple levels. I hear you talk about the NIS and stuff like that, and my personal belief is that that's one we gotta look at it, but we also gotta look at where we giving away our money. And in us getting to that 80,000, we're going to have to think differently. So someone was saying about, you know, if we go after that number, we're looking at maybe a minimum of 5,000 more cars on the road, what a problem it would create. Mm-hmm. And I want to suggest that we don't need any more cars. We can get the 80,000 without any more cars on the road. We already have too many cars. We have to look at ride sharing, maximizing our public transportation. We need to look at ride sharing, car sharing, taxis, everything we already have here that can give us great transportation without people buying more cars, even if we move to these 80,000 within the next 10 to 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I have to
population growth depends on planning, intense planning.
Yes.
It also depends on education and continuing to educate your population. Population expansion as envisaged and as used by the other places you've mentioned always, as part of the entire process, you will have uncertainty, unease among your population about how quickly people will assimilate, whether their culture will supersede and override yours, or whether they will adapt to your culture, whatever that is. If you're uncertain of your culture, trust me, you will lose it. If you like to adapt to other people more than have them adapt to you, you will forget who you are very soon. And if the practices that you highlight, for example, their population growth strategy as opposed to yours, your population will be overrun, which is the term that they use in certain areas. So if you have, for example, persons who understand that if you go into a country as a minority, and you want to be heard, understood, and have your footprint, you procreate, then they will do so. So they will have five children to, as you say, your intelligentsia class who say, one is enough for me, or I don't want any at all because my lifestyle does not support these wailing children in the middle of the night, which I've heard people say. Now, I remember going back to when we were fighting the AIDS pandemic with, you know, the PSAs and so on. I said at an AIDS conference I attended in Trinidad that we were driving ourselves into extinction. And I was asked, why am I saying that? And I said, okay, to have children, you have to have unprotected sex. If you're telling me that AIDS killing or productive people between ages 18 and 30 And in order to combat it, you're saying condomize, which stops procreation. You're killing off your productive people, and you're stopping replenishing them. You are driving yourself into extinction.
Mm-hmm.
That's a recipe for extinction. And people looked at me as though I was speaking Greek. So I sat down and listened to the other talk that was going around, which was, I suppose, sexier than what I was saying. So I understand why we are where we are. And therefore, if we have to, and this thing about more cars, sir, what we need to do is make public transport affordable, enticing, exciting, and a reason for me to put on my car. Because if to service my car is going to be $1,000, if to put gas in it for a month is going to be $250, and if a ride on an air-conditioned bus is going to take me 15 minutes and cost me $5, I will do that.
Yeah, exactly.
If I can get...
Yeah, and not only that, the amount of money you would save in 10 years, you would save anywhere around $120,000.
Which could give me an extension to the house and a jacuzzi and more land tax. But at least I could pay it. And here's the other thing. Since I was talking to the previous caller about ferries, I came back to Barbados in 1981 and Oyston's fish market was just done and they were working on the Bridgetown fish market. I said to my cousin who worked with Texaco, and they operated a ferry then between Britain and France. I said to him, I want a ferry between Oyston's, Bridgetown, Holtown, and Spitestown. I would charge $5, have a nice girl give you your newspaper and a donut and coffee on the way down. He told me, Bajans don't travel on the water, shelve that. But I could not see why you would not have a water taxi from Oyston's fish market, which then had a nice jetty and a nice car park. Why I would not travel from St. Philip, park my car there, get in a ferry, rather than stuck in traffic coming down Highway 7 to get to Bridgetown an hour and a half later, because Highway 7 was then jammed. From the drill hall to Royal Bank where I work would take me over 25 minutes if I got stuck in morning rush hour traffic. Why I would not get on a ferry in Oyston's, get down to Bridgetown, have a cup of coffee and donuts and a newspaper on my way down, get off at the Bridgetown fish market or wherever, walk across the Royal Bank, come in there in a basin, get off and walk across the Royal Bank, and go back and do the same thing on afternoons, and sit down and enjoy the ride, because the hovercraft don't bounce all over the place, right? And if you want to run it in the night for tourists to have a look at Barbados by sea by night, you make some extra money in the night. It ain't happened yet, but you know, I still dreaming. I can be retired in 2 years, I might do it after all.
And not only that, you see, the thing about the car is that we were colonized by the little black box that we put in our homes.
Yeah.
And we take up their tools and their instruments and believe that they're for us. And they are not for us. You know, there are some things that are created that we could use and we could adapt for us. That's what we need to understand. But their tools are not generally for us. And this is part of the problem. Now, let me move on to COVID and education, which I believe that COVID has brought us a great opportunity for us to tweak our education and to be able to maybe able to tweak a few problems that we have and sort some stuff out. COVID has put a few people on the breadline. Now, these people that are on the breadline, I believe they have more skills than maybe working in a hotel as a night auditor or whatever the case may be. They might have a little desire to be teaching, even if it's part-time. And why I say that is that when I look at the private schools in Barbados and around the world, one of the things that stands out to me is the ratio, the teacher-to-student body. You're looking at a ratio between 1-to-1, 5-to-1, and 10-to-1, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have a ratio here of maybe 25-to-1, 30-to-1, 20-to-1. Now, with the technology of these online classes and stuff, mm-hmm. couldn't we maybe look at putting out feelers to find out those who are interested?
Mm-hmm.
And we could have them as teacher's aides, so that the ratio could come down to maybe 15-to-1 or maybe 10-to-1. The teacher's aides will operate with the teacher, and so the teacher would then be able to work with those students who they feel are more challenging and need more work. And the teacher's aides could work with the other kids who will be maybe easier for them to handle, as also doing this job would be also new to them to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And it would be kind of managed that way, because then the persons wouldn't have to be in the class. They would be online, mm-hmm. those students. Mm-hmm. And maybe because of the whole thing of COVID too, some of those students would be working from home, and the ones that maybe need that extra work, that face-to-face, the teacher could work with. Also, because we know that if teachers had more time, they would be able to see in those children that are more challenging where it is that they need to guide them. Mm-hmm. You know, if the teachers had more time to do their job. And I think here is a great, here's a great opportunity, because we're already using, we have started to use the technology, mm-hmm. and we can then, and we have, because of the COVID situation, we have people who are unemployed and who might have that desire.
Yeah, and the, again, going back to the throne speech, and I think in today's newspaper as well, there's a call for volunteers to go to schools and do things like ensure social distancing. And so there are opportunities being provided for a different type of monitoring and employment during this COVID period. So the challenge with most of what you're saying comes down to two basic things. One, our reluctance. I won't choose the right word. The reluctance to change to new and innovative ideas, because almost everything that you've put forward, almost everything that some of the callers have put forward over the period of this program, I can tell you I've had 3 or 4 WhatsApp messages where some have said, good idea, where others have pointed out why it shouldn't or couldn't work. So agriculture, when have we ever been self-sufficient in food? Travel, Liat bankrupt, people coming from New York. You always get the why it can't work.
Mm-hmm.
Before people say, well, this is an idea. How best can we implement this? Where has it worked before? What are the pitfalls there? How can we avoid it? You have islands in the Caribbean where people travel by ferries between Dominica and Martinique, between Antigua and the other islands. Trinidad have water taxis. So they exist. You look at them, you see where the problems are. You have teaching now online. You have parents who have to go to work. They have children who are 10 and 11. They don't know what to do with them. They don't want to leave them at home alone. They can't leave them by a neighbor. The husband can't stay home today and the wife tomorrow. They have challenges like that. So the question is, how can we fix this for the benefit of our people while providing employment for other people? What can business places do? Are there places at work where you could have work-study areas, child-safe areas where children could go and study in the workplace because of less numbers there, or people working remotely, you now have empty, open areas that could be used to accommodate those people? We have to get innovative. We have to change the way we keep thinking. You talk about the little box that controls us. We control the box. Unfortunately, unfortunately, sir, and this is where I'll point the finger again at the business that I work in, which is radio, and I get my licks for saying so. We surrendered the education part of radio to people playing music and engaging with the public on matters, trivial and otherwise. But there is a way in which we could be used. I keep saying so, and I'm going to leave this business saying so, sir. You take Sparrows Calypso Federation, or you take Gabby's Boots or Cadavers, you play it, you have a discussion that centers on what was Federation. Why was the song Federation written? What were the voices of Federation? So you play Eric Williams' speech, One from Ten Leaves North. You play Grant Lee Adams' Why the Federation Didn't Want a Bajan Premier and so on, as stated in the song. And then you have today's intellectuals talking to the public, children so that you engage them at a different level. You do the same thing with Gabby's Boots. What was the intervention in St. Vincent about? What did the Prime Minister say at the time? What did the people in Barbados say at the time? You do the same thing with Cat Attack. Sir, and you change the way in which your public gets its information, how it views your culture, how it views your musical expression, and you turn it into a tool to educate and change the way your population views itself. That way, when you talk about going to a republic, people are going to say, oh, that means a dictator. Because they would know that there are several forms of republics.
A republic.
They would know that Australia is one, that the United States is one, that some republics still recognize the Queen, while others do not. Some have executive presidents, while others do not. They would know that because you've used the medium to educate them, not waiting on them to go to Cave Hill and take a course, or, you know, asking somebody who gives them the wrong information. So we surrendered our duty, and we did it for nonsense. We threw away the tapes. We say people ain't using tapes no more. We mash up, you know, we threw away our libraries, got rid of librarians and archivists, and we dumped it. And then we listen to Fox and CNN to tell us who and what we are.
Yeah.
That don't make sense to me, sir. It doesn't.
Don't make sense.
We talk more about Bush and Trump and all these people. We know more about them than we know about our leaders. And, sir, the only way we can change it is by starting the process now of saying, this is what we've done wrong. This is what COVID allows us to do. I read the throne speech before Her Excellency delivered it, because I was at the Lloyd Erskine Sandiford at 7:15 for a 9:15, 10 o'clock engagement. I read it all. And it said in it that there'll be training done for all sorts of people, government employees, training. I keep hearing about training. Who's doing the training? What kind of training? And after we've trained our people, I've gone through the throne speech again. I see nothing in here for young university graduates, the people we've churned out in large numbers, how we plan to get them to contribute to the development and expansion of the society, the economy, and the development of Barbados. I don't see it here. It may be there somewhere, but in translation, it got lost to me. But we're going to talk about same-sex marriage, and we're going to talk about marijuana, and we're going to talk about those things because it excites us, and it's all over Facebook. Sir, I enjoyed our conversation. We should have more like this. Thank you very much. This is Dr. Brass Tacks.